I'm pulling out of the parking lot. We all know what that means. Or maybe we don't. This is a rare episode of Drive From Work. So I'm doing three podcasts to capture my talk from MagicCon Atlanta on the top 20 most influential expansions of all time. In part one, I got through the first six. My goal today is to get through the next seven. And then tomorrow, the final seven, on the next podcast, the final seven. So, because I was running out of time to get it done this week, I'm doing a rare Drive From Work podcast, where I end up at home. So, I don't do these. I've done some before, but I don't do them very often. Okay, so number 14 in the most influential expansions of all time is Antiquities. So, when Richard Garfield first made Magic, he had a bunch of different playtesters. I talked about this last time. One group he had met at University of Pennsylvania, we now refer to as the East Coast Playtesters. Scaphalias, Jim Lynn, Dave Petty, and Chris Page. So anyway, Magic, basically the way Magic worked was Magic came out in August of 1993. They printed enough cards for a year. It sold out in 6 weeks. So they printed Beta in October of 1993. No, really, this is really, this is enough for a year. Sold out in like a week. So basically, they knew pretty fast that they needed to make more expansions. Richard had talked to his playtesters, and they were working on expansions. In fact, the East Coast playtesters were working on a set codenamed Ice Age. See if you can break that one. Richard came to them and said, okay, I need you to stop doing that. We need to make an expansion. So they made a small expansion called Antiquities. Also, a little bit of trivia. It wasn't just the, I'm realizing now, it wasn't just the East Coast playtesters. I didn't mention this in my talk. I believe Joel Mick also helped them with Antiquities. I'm now realizing I missed that. I missed that in my when I did my panel. Anyway, so Antiquities did a bunch of things that were really interesting. Probably the two biggest things, and this is why it's on the list. Number one, it was the first Magic expansion to have a mechanical theme. Alpha, obviously, was just lots of cards. Arabian Nights had a story that connected it. But Antiquities said, we are about something. What are we about? We are about artifacts. How do you know that? Well, the set is a lot of artifacts. Every colored card references or has something to do with artifacts. In fact, there are only three cards in the entire set that do not have the word artifact or artifact somewhere on the card. And it's all lands. That there was lands that tap for colorless that, you know, implied they would cast artifacts but didn't technically mention artifacts. But anyway, the set was very themed. Every single card in the set, other than the lands, some of the lands, directly were an artifact or directly interacted with artifacts mechanically. Also, the other thing that it did for the first time is there was a story. Richard and Alpha had definitely had proper names. What is Llanowar? Who is Urza? But it wasn't really until Antiquities where the idea was you were an archaeologist digging up artifacts of the past, much like Urza and Mishra were. And from that, you're hearing snippets of little story about this mighty war between these two brothers. And this was the beginning of The Brothers' War, which would become a really famous novel, one of the biggest, probably my favorite of the Magic novels. We made a whole set out of it. There's a saga. It's probably Magic's most famous story. And it all got introduced here. The other thing that Antiquities messed around with, they did a lot of things first. They did alternate art. Their first sets, the lands had more than one piece of art on it. They did a lot of exploration as an early set. Like I said, last time when I talked about alliances, I do think the East Coast playtesters were a really clever group of designers, and they were very early in Magic, but they definitely toyed around and played with stuff that would go on to be pretty important. And Antiquities was my favorite set before I came to Wizards. Okay, next up, number 13, War of the Spark, February 2022. Oh, Antiquities was March of 1994, by the way. So February of 2022, I led the vision design. Dave Humphreys led the set design. So the idea is our first capstone event set. The story I told my panel is I remember talking to Doug Beyer. Doug Beyer is in, does a lot of the creative stuff. It was in charge. And he came up with the Bola story. So he was telling me the Bola story. And he gets to the end of the story. He goes, okay, the story all wraps up in a dramatic finale. Bolas has taken his eternal zombies from Amonkhet and then trapped almost every planeswalker we know for a giant showdown because he is trying to steal the sparks from all the planeswalkers, regain his former glory, and become godlike once again. In the Planeswalker War! I think he actually did call it War of the Spark in his initial thing. But anyway, so I was like, oh, okay, there's a Planeswalker War. Okay, so how many planeswalkers are in it? All the planeswalkers, or almost all the planeswalkers. And I'm like, okay, Doug, I get like 3 planeswalker cards. And so I spent a lot of time trying to figure that out. Eventually, as you probably know, the final set has 36 planeswalkers in it. Plus a buy the box with Tezzeret, which is a 37 planeswalker. So the set did a lot of things. First and foremost, it really advanced planeswalkers in a big way. It was the first set that did static abilities on planeswalkers, and it, yeah, there are a few things like Garrick that sort of did that, but at first as an actual static ability and not some of a larger mechanic. It was the first uncommon planeswalkers, the first hybrid planeswalkers, the first planeswalkers that only had negative abilities, and like you could only use them so many times, and there was no inherent way to build them up, but there was proliferated stuff. You know, it was the definitely the set. So we had done Proliferate for the first time in Scars of Mirrodin, but we really liked Proliferate. And one of the challenges was we kept trying to bring Proliferate back, and it kept not working out. This is a set where we finally did bring it back. And really showing that, you know, you could use Mechanic in a completely different way. Proliferate in Scars of Mirrodin was all about -1/-1 counters and poison. It represented disease. But in this set, it was all about +1/+1 counters and loyalty counters, because it's about planeswalkers. Speaking of +1/+1 counters, we also introduced the amass mechanic. We were trying to solve the problem of how to have a giant army that wasn't just infinite creatures gumming up the board. And so we came up with a mechanic where if you don't have an army, you make a token army. And then if you do have an army, you just put +1/+1 counters on it. It's amass N. Now amass zombies, I guess. But anyway, amass has gone on to become a really popular mechanic that we use many times. You know, it really sort of took a theme and hammered it home, and it did, like I said, it was the very first capstone event set of really, it's not about the environment as much, it's about the story and what's going on. Anyway, and it's the only, in the history of Magic, it is the only expansion that took place on a set at the same place as the set before it and sold more than the set before it. That's the only, in the history of Magic, the only set to ever do that. Okay, that's why. War of the Spark, number 13. Number 12, Dominaria. So Dominaria came out in September of 2018. Again, I led the set vision design, and Dave Humphreys led the set design. So Dominaria was really challenging because early Magic, we stayed on, for like 10 years, we were mostly just on Dominaria. You know, Magic started on Dominaria and Alpha, and then, you know, we went to Arabian Nights, and we later retroactively called it Rabaya. And other than that, Ogrotha took us, Homelands took us to Ogrotha. When Michael and I started the Weatherlight story, we got us off the plane a little bit to go to Wrath, but mostly, we kept coming back. And Dominaria, there's like 30 or 40 sets that take place in Dominaria. Well, what happened was, we wanted to, like, sort of return to Dominaria, but we wanted to update Dominaria, make it more like a modern plane. And all of our modern planes had a, you know, they were about something. Oh, Innistrad's the gothic horror plane. Ravnica is the city plane about guilds. Like, they, each of them were about something. And Dominaria was about so many different things that it didn't have an identity. And so one of the challenges is we had to figure out how to make it have an identity. In the end, what we realized was we liked the idea that it was a world of history. Much like you, the players, who, hey, there's all these sets that you've played with it if you're an old-time player. And there's all these stories that come, but they're not just made up just for the plane. We, the players, experience the stories. And so having history, we thought history was a fun theme. But in order to make history work, first off, we said, well, what represents history in the game? And the answer was the graveyard. It's where, when creatures die, it's where they go. When spells get cast, it's where they go. It's really the past of the game. But the set before, the previous year, Amonkhet had done a major graveyard theme. And after us, Theros Beyond Death was going to do a major graveyard theme. So we were sort of told, don't do the graveyard. Oh, to be fair, we were told by me. I told us not to do the graveyard. But I knew that we had graveyards before and after. So we looked and said, what else can we care about? What else represents the past? And we're like, oh, there could be mighty objects of the past. You know, antiquities, if you will, artifacts. There could be legendary creatures that themselves. I think in my panel, I showed Nicol Bolas. He's 1,000 years old. He himself is from the past. And the third thing we came up with is the idea of maybe representing stories. But how can we represent stories? Which brings us to a story about making stories. So when, during Future Sight, Matt Cavada came to me and pitched the idea of, hey, why don't we do cards that are planeswalkers? They're the major part of our story, our major characters. And the whole point of doing Time Spiral Block was to sort of recontextualize the planeswalkers so that we could do more with them. So why not make cards out of them? So we ended up trying to make them. They were originally going to be on the bonus sheet. Three of them, blue, black, and red, were going to be, not red, blue, black, and green, were going to be on the bonus sheet in Future Sight. But we ran out of time to figure out how to do them, so they ended up coming out of Lorwyn. But one of the early versions of them, the way it worked was they had three abilities. Turn one, you do the first ability. Turn two, you do the second ability. Turn three, you do the third ability. Turn four, you go back to the first ability. So the predecessor to Garrick, named Fendari, I believe. Turn one, you make a 3-3 beast. Turn two, for every beast, you make another beast. Turn three, all your beasts get +3/+3 and trample. So the idea, the flavor of it is, I make a beast. On turn two, I copy it. Now I have two beasts. Now all my beasts get +3/+3. I attack with two beasts that are now 6-6 creatures. On my fourth turn, I make another beast. On my fifth turn, I copy beasts. Now I have four beasts. And then they all get +3/+3. But the problem is, let's say turn one, I make a beast, and then you bolt my beast. You destroy it. Okay, well, turn two, nothing happens. I have nothing to copy. Turn three, all my beasts get +3/+3 and trample, but I don't have any beasts. So the idea is, like, nothing happens, and it just made the planeswalker feel like an idiot. Like, you know, why am I going through it? Like, it made him feel dumb, and it didn't give him agency. So we ended up shifting to the idea of, okay, they have loyalty, and you can have, they'll do things for you, but you can sort of pick and choose what they do, so it made him feel more smart. But we were trying to figure out stories. It dawned on me that the problem that early planeswalker design had was the how it just wouldn't change what it was. But that's not a downside for stories. That's what a story is. There's chapter A, chapter 2, chapter 3. That's the story. And if weird things happen, okay, that's the story. That's what happens. That stories don't need agency like planeswalkers did. So we ended up using those to make them. And then those are what became sagas. Sagas would go on to become a very powerful. I mean, originally they were something we did in Dominaria, but they quickly became deciduous. We do them in all sorts of places now. They're a valuable tool in multiverse, a valuable tool in universes beyond. There's just a lot going on, a lot that we're doing. So anyway, we said, okay, we have artifacts, we have legendary things, we have sagas. What if we just made those matter? What if we put those together? So originally when we wrote it, I just said, okay. Joyra was, whenever you play an artifact or a legendary thing or a saga, draw a card. But the problem was, people would read that list and like, what? Why are these together? They didn't understand the list. So much so that the notes got back to Bill, and Bill, when he was doing the review, said, yeah, we're not doing this mechanic. And I'm like, no, Bill, it's the glue that holds everything together. We're the history set. It's the key. And Bill was like, look, I will give you 4 weeks. But if you can't make this make sense, people don't understand it. It doesn't matter. It's not glue. If no one understands what you're doing, it's not glue. So you need to figure out a way to make this make sense or pick something else. Do something different. And so I said, okay. And to make the shorten the story, in the end what I realized was I had to be blunt. If these things were about being historic, well, instead of listing them out, I just said, whenever you play a historic spell, this happens. Okay, what's in a historic spell? Then reminder text, I explain it. But by labeling it and making it up front, doing what we now call batching, it really changed how people perceived it. Now when I said, whenever you cast a historic spell, they go, oh, you're casting a historic spell. Well, tell me, what is a historic spell? And then I tell you, like, I see, that's an historic spell. Batching has proved to be very popular. We've done it, Outlaws and a bunch of other places. So anyway, War of the Spark did sagas. They redid Planeswalkers. They did all this stuff to really be something cool and different. So that is why War of the Spark is number 13. That's why Dominaria was number 12. Dominaria did sagas, did batching. It did one other thing real quickly. The idea of every pack has a legendary creature in it. Last time we made Legendaries Matter, which was in Kamigawa, Champions of Kamigawa, we made all the rares legendary in some of the uncommons. But that was hard to tell. Like, how many packs did you have opened up before you caught that all the rare creatures were legendary? 6 packs? 7? It took a while to understand that. But in Dominaria, every pack had a legend. You could pick that up really quickly. We could tell that to you. You could expect it. And so it really took the theme. And that was the idea of communicating the theme through constancy. This is what the set does. Every single pack of the set does this. It became a really good tool for helping people understand what the set was about. Okay, that's number 12, Dominaria. Number 11, Theros. So Theros came out in September of 2013. I led the design. Eric Lauer led the development. It's going to be a completely different set, by the way. The block was going to be... I had this idea of a block that played out through time. So the first set was prehistoric. There's dinosaurs and cavemen and whatever prehistoric stuff we wanted to do. And then the second set flashes forward thousands of years in time, and now it's medieval times, and we get to do a fun medieval set. And the third set flashes through time thousands of years, and now we're in the future. It's the most futuristic set we've ever done. And the idea was this idea of, you know, you're on a singular world, but seeing that world in radically different ages of time. The problem is, Brady Donmuth, who's had the creative team at the time, said, look, we can't do that. What you're asking for is 3 worlds. I know you say it's the same world, but it's not. It's really 3 different worlds. And at the time, they had like 4 people. Like, we're not staffed up to make 3 worlds. We're staffed up to make 1 world. So I have a suggestion. Here's my suggestion. Set 1, let's go to our own version of Greek mythology. We've talked about it forever. Let's go there. Let's do that. Second set, let's stay there. We'll stay in Greek mythology world. And third set, you got it. We're still in Greek mythology world. Maybe we could do a little bit of like visiting like the spirit of the gods or something. But mostly, it's the same world because we can build that singular world. And he also said, you know, we also talked about doing more stuff with enchantments. Maybe do some stuff with enchantments. So the interesting thing about that world is we started by saying we wanted to have gods. It's mythology, Greek mythology. The gods are pretty important. We made gods for each color, made gods for each 2-color pair. And then we realized that, you know, taking the suggestion that he had given about enchantments, we thought, okay, maybe the way we represent the feel of the gods is enchantments. That the gods themselves and the creatures they can summon, that are, you know, creatures of the gods, are enchantment creatures. And that would allow us to have enough Azfan in an enchantment set to do enchantments. Now, we had done enchantments once before in Urza Saga block, but the problem was, A, we had a lot of broken artifacts in that set, and the creative team, when they named the name of the cycle for the story, called it the Artifact Cycle. So it was an artifact cycle with broken artifacts, and like, it's hard to tell that it was an enchantment set. So I wanted to do it right. I really felt like enchantments are, I mean, we had done all these artifact sets, and enchantments are just as key to magic as artifacts are. So we did it. So Theros really put enchantment sets of enchantment blocks on the map and really reconfigured how we did them. And when we were trying to make the enchantments, the gods work as enchantments, we came across this idea of, we loved the idea of it's the devotion of the people that matter for the gods. But how do we do that? And that's when we came up with the idea of Chroma. So Chroma was a mechanic when I was working on Future Sight. Fifth Dawn, I had Aaron Forsyth, who at the time was running the website. I had him join the team. The idea being he's going to write an article all about it, and that would be a fun thing to do. And he was a pro player. I knew he'd have fun being on a team, and I thought it'd be valuable to have him. He ended up being really valuable. He made Scry. He made Sunburst. He did such a good job. In fact, we hired him to be on R&D. Obviously, he's my boss now, so things worked out well for Aaron. But anyway, Aaron pitched a card called Little White Butterflies. and you showed your hand, and for every white mana symbol in a card in your hand, you made a 1/1 butterfly token. And I liked the card so much, I said, look, this isn't a singular card. This is a whole mechanic. We got to save this. So I didn't put it in Fifth Dawn. I later would put one of card, Phosphorescent Feast, in Future Sight, and then that card would get repeated again in Eventide, where Chroma appeared. And I was very excited for Chroma. I really thought it was a cool mechanic. And it kind of landed with a thud. So when we were talking about Theros, we're like, no, Chroma is kind of what we want. But man, Chroma did poorly. And that's why I said, well, maybe we could remake it. And I said, you know, there's a couple problems with Chroma. A, it had a bad name. Chroma just means color in Latin. It wasn't very evocative. It didn't have a lot of flavor. It also was all over the board. It wasn't very concentrated. You looked in lots of different places. But the Chroma cards didn't all go in a deck together. It didn't have a dream of something you would build. We wanted to be more concentrated. And anyway, the idea is we came up with Devotion. What if Devotion was Chroma, A, with a better name, better flavor, and we only counted things on the battlefield? So that way, all your cards, at least of the same color, would go in the same deck. If I had a Devotion to Red card, well, all my Devotion to Red cards wanted to go in the same, basically, mono-red deck. So we tried it again. It was very successful, and it became the poster child for sort of how we redo mechanics. Whenever we talk about it, it is the one we talk about of... It went from zero to hero, right? It went from nobody liked it to being one of the most popular parts of the set. Also, just the enchantment theme in general really gives a lot of the goal of using enchantment creatures as a function. It's the first, I mean, we tease enchantment creatures in Future Sight, but this was the first set with enchantment creatures. And the enchantment frame, we didn't do it right away, but eventually would become the actual enchantment frame. So Theros was super influential. It just did a lot of things, introduced a lot of concepts. And that is why it is number 9. Oh, no, not number 9. Number 11. Number 10 is Legends. Came out in June of 1994. Steve Conard was the lead designer. Scaphalias was the lead developer. So I talked earlier about how Richard talked to the playtesters to try to get them to make sets. Talked to the East Coast playtesters and others, which I'll get to. Peter Akison did the same thing. He went to people in the company. Homelands and the Dark and Legends were all sets that were made by people internal to Wizards. Steve Conard, by the way, I first met him. He used to do a thing called the Caravan Project, where they would drive around from game store to game store and have little like days where come meet. They would bring magic artists with them, and then usually they would get some local people. I did the one in Los Angeles, so I was the puzzle guy at the time. But anyway, that's where I met Steve. I worked with Steve for many years. And Steve was a longtime friend of Peter's. He was one of the five people that founded Wizards of the Coast. And he really was enamored by the idea of making a magic set that was inspired by the D&D role-playing game that he and Peter had done. And so they really went through and they found a lot of cool flavors. Now, the interesting thing was very early. Richard and the East Coast playtesters had made the first two sets. This was the third expansion. And Steve really didn't know how to, like, I showed some cards in my preview panel. And the cards would just say sort of wonky things and like, okay, let's figure out how to actually, like, there's no templates or anything. You know, this card reverses the spell and the spell goes against the enemy and then instant tap. And like, what? What does this all mean? And so Scaff had to sort of piece it together and figure it out. Legends was famous, I think, for two things. Number one, to introduce gold cards. The idea that, you know, Alpha had the five colors, but for the first time, the colors were together. Now, in the set, there only were, I think, allied cards and shard cards. I don't think there was any enemy cards. I know there wasn't any enemy cards or wedge cards. But anyway, it introduced that, and it introduced legendary things. Originally, they were summon legend, but eventually, the lands were legendary, so the super tape did exist in Legends, but it didn't get applied to the creatures right away. Anyway, legendary would go on to become a pretty staple and important thing. In fact, if you think about gold cards and legendary cards, you think about one of the most famous cycles in the set, the Elder Dragon Legends. Nicol Bolas being the most famous of the five. Those five guys would lead directly to the Commander format. EDH stands for Elder Dragon Highlander. And the reason for that name was originally you only had five commanders you could choose from, the five Elder Dragons from Legends. So legends, you know, Commander is a huge part of Magic, and legends literally invented gold cards, legend cards, and the Elder Dragons. So it could not be more the forerunner of the Commander format. So that is why Legends is number 10. Number 9 is Odyssey, October 2001. I led the design. Randy Bueller led development. So it is a set. Invasion came before it, and that was all about multicolor. But Odyssey was all about the graveyard. We had done a few sets that had graveyard themes before, like Weatherlight had some graveyard themes. But this is the first set that sort of went all in on the graveyard and tied its mechanics to the graveyard. You know, the two main mechanics of the set, which I guess we'll talk about, was Threshold and Flashback. Threshold is not only institutional in what it did. Threshold allowed you to upgrade your card if you had 7 more cards in your graveyard. It introduced a kind of mechanic. In R&D, we now refer to a Threshold mechanic, of which Threshold was the first one. And there are a lot of mechanics like Metalcraft and such that like are built around you reaching a certain threshold, if you will. So it very much influenced us. Flashback was a spell that lets you cast a spell twice. My creation. And I named it as the number one mechanic of all time in my top 20 things. Flashback has become deciduous now, as has Threshold. Both Threshold and they're decision mechanics. We use them all the time now. And Flashback, there's lots of like Harmonize or Jumpstart. There's just whole mechanics that are riffing off what it's doing. Flashback just become, you know, so the two main mechanics became staple mechanics of the set. The graveyard theme became one of the core themes that we use all the time now. And it was the first set to introduce, there was a little graveyard thing on the cards that worked out of the graveyard. It was originally going to be a thing we were going to carry out through Magic, but then we changed the frames in Mirrodin and it didn't fit anymore. But just the idea of iconography that represents mechanical function, you know, outside of just the mana symbols, that all came from Odyssey. So Odyssey did a lot of cool things, and why it's my number 9. Okay, our last one of the day, because the last 7 I'll do on the next podcast, is Zendikar, original Zendikar, October 2009. I led the design, Henry led the development. So the story behind this one was, I was always thinking of things to build blocks around. We'd done blocks on multicolor, on graveyard, on artifacts. And I said, you know what I think is really interesting? Land. I felt there's a lot of potential in mechanics centering around land. I did not get a lot of support at the time, but Randy Bueller, who's my boss, felt like, well, you got to let Mark innovate from time to time. And so he felt like every 5-year plan, I got one block that was kind of Mark innovating, Mark trying something different. And so I, he put it 5th out of 5, but eventually we got there to Lanzapalooza, as I called it. Now, Bill was a bit skeptical, and once again, I mentioned this in my pet. It's Bill's job at the time to be skeptical. The reason these stories are all like, Bill says, prove this to me, is because that was Bill's job to make me prove it to him. And each time, I had to prove it. And it was because I had to prove it that I found a better way of doing things. So anyway, that was Bill's job. So Bill said, I don't know about this theme, Mark. I'm going to give you 2 months. Come back in 2 months. If I don't think you're supporting the theme properly, we're going to change the theme. So in those 2 months, we built 46 land mechanics. The one that stayed was Landfall, which again, another really cornerstone deciduous mechanic that we use all the time now. And more important than anything else, it taught us a really important design rule, which is that a lot of time you have tension, and it's okay to have some tension in your design, but it's also okay to do things in which the player gets to do the thing they want to do and you reward them for it. It doesn't mean there's not strategic decisions. There are. You choose when to play the land. But for lower players who don't want to think about it, they just play their land and get a reward. It's fun giving cookies to people for things they want to do. And that really hammered home. That's one of the biggest things of Zendikar is understanding that. It also had this like Typhle theme. Ally was the thing. It really sort of cemented the idea that, you know, Typhle is popular, but we don't have to do Typhle sets or not Typhle sets. We can have Typhle be a component piece of a set. We can have one single creature type being something that matters and plays a role in the set. And Allies did a really good job of that and really cemented that idea. What else? Zendikar. I think Zendikar also, it was, It was one of, I think Zendikar and Ravnica and Innistrad that we're talking about really were fundamental sort of new places. It made an adventure world, something we would come back to. It would inspire us to make a D&D set eventually. So it just was a very influential set. Obviously, we went back to it multiple times because of the world that was really compelling. It also was the introduction, although very lightly teased in Zendikar, but introduced the Eldrazi. So anyway, that was why Zendikar is number 8. Okay, I got 7 more to go, but luckily I have another podcast. So on the next podcast, I will do the final part 3 of my top 20 most influential expansions of all time. But anyway, guys, I'm now home. Because remember, this was Drive to Home. So instead of talking magic, I'm not going to make magic. I'm going to go eat dinner. So instead of talking magic, I'm eating dinner. But anyway, guys, that means this is the end of my drive from work. So I'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.